Blog Talk Radio.
Look, I'd like to start off the New Year's the right way. You know me? I like to start off with a little deception and, you know, a little this, a little that, deck the halls and all the holly, that good jazz. I mean, Christmas is over, folks. It's time for Off the Rails. Yeah, I know what the cue cards tell me. I don't read cue cards. You know me. I just...
Look in my eyes. What do you see? The cost of something I would be.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight marks the day before we go into 2018, because honestly, it's already 11:09, so might as well be the 31st of December, because this year went by in a flash. As a fan, we got some things to focus on in 2017. We saw the end of Asuka's era in NXT as the longest reigning champion. We saw the introduction of the Mae Young Classic, but not only a big year for WWE, no. This was a huge year for wrestlers such as Matthew Riddle, Keith Lee, Darby Allin, Ethan Page, Jeff Cobb, Sami Callihan as always, and of course, wrestlers around the universe. Not only Chris Jericho and Kenny Omega making headlines this year, but what was the focus of 2017 as a wrestling fan? Now, I did say that yesterday I was going to do Off the Rails Uncensored, but you know me, times vary as normal. I like to stay up late and think about wrestling, talk about wrestling. Hell, I mean, in my sleep, I dream that I'm at a show. But the thing is, it was pretty cool to be a fan this year. It was pretty cool to gripe and bitch and moan about what I didn't like the whole entire year. But I gotta say, the year 2017, yes, it was special, because now there are certain individuals that we could focus on, and there are certain individuals that we wish not to focus on. Okay, and what does good old B-Train have in store for you on this episode of Off the Rails Uncensored? Well, I can tell you that both shows, Wrestle Radio and Off the Rails Uncensored, are going to get cosmetic makeovers, because as far as I am concerned, I'm a perfectionist and I like things to go the way I like them to go. But we all know in wrestling, not only does a podcast get a cosmetic makeover, but the person himself, from a personality standpoint. You see, I'm not reading off a fucking cue card. I'm not preparing for a guest to come on the show. What I'm doing is I'm letting out exactly what I feel, you know, was important for us as fans to, you know, looked at upon, and that is NXT, the UK title tournament, how amazing Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate have been, how amazing the performers from the UK when they infiltrated the WWE system, how they flourished, okay? Granted, they're not the main attraction yet, but I think fans are starting to take notice of Pete Dunne. They're starting to take notice of Tyler Bate. They're starting to take notice of NXT, period. You've got guys like Siamus Andrade, who's got an amazing valet. I love her to death. Zelina kind of reminds me of Sensational Sherry, but a lot more advanced. You've got Drew McIntyre, who resurrected his career in WWE, but, you know, didn't necessarily kill his career once he left. You've got some unexpected heel turns that occurred this year, like Mojo Rawley turning on Zack Ryder. What else? Oh, yes. I'm going to discuss with you all the Bullet Club craze. Marty Scurll, Cody Rhodes, the Young Bucks. How Cody Rhodes, you know, resurrected his career in Ring of Honor. He basically was free. He freed himself from what he was in WWE. Made himself 10 times better, in my opinion. Because, look, Cody was doing so-so gimmicks in WWE. The best one that he had in that whole entire lifespan as a wrestler in WWE was probably Dashing Cody. Anyways, I digress. So, what am I here tonight to talk to you about? Yeah, I'm kind of disappointed, guys, that I didn't get to keep up the tradition of going to all major four. It is quite an addiction going to all the major pay-per-views, but I got bigger fish to fry. See, tonight's episode of Off the Rails Uncensored Holiday Edition should be the simple focus on not just one person, but as 2017 progressed, we started to see the WWE try and formulate a simple plan or execute a play, as Michael Hayes would say. Let's just say, was very interesting to say the least. You saw a lot of ups, you saw a lot of downs. Which company am I referring to when I say this? I am simply referring to the WWE. Now, there's a smaller market out there that's having a bigger success, and it's really, really competing with WWE. Not just Ring of Honor, PWG, Wrestling Revolver, ICW, the list goes on and on and on. But are these mini titans, did they have enough juice? Well, to answer that question, mini titans, an understatement when it comes to New Japan. You have a lot of young talent saying, hey, I like to go to New Japan. I mean, why not? You can elevate your career. Look at a guy like Dolph Ziggler. Look at a guy like Kenny Omega, who shot down WWE, and can you blame him? Because, look, if he knows what's going to happen to his career, why even bother? Because look at who he's facing. He's facing the guy that was in WWE, not just WWE, but ECW and some of the territories. This guy has been wrestling since he was 16, the one, the only, the Ayatollah of Rock and Rolla, the Lionheart, Chris Jericho. Now, Jericho, he's found ways to get back into the limelight, not just in Japan, but I mean, if his match is being featured on the front of Staples Center, if that match between him and Kenny Omega is being featured in front of a marquee of the Staples Center Arena, that's a pretty big deal. And that kind of caught everyone's attention when the match was announced itself, so at WK12, which is the equivalent of WrestleMania, and most will say it's 10 times better, 20 times better than WrestleMania will ever be, I don't doubt it, because I actually sat down and watched an old WK. I watched WK11, okay, and there's some familiar faces there. I mean, Billy Gunn was there, Road Dogg, I don't think, was there, but I believe that, you know, when Japan witnesses a spectacle like WK in the Tokyo Dome, let's just say this. Their attention is all focused on the wrestlers. They're not half booing, half cheering like here in the States. They're 100% at full attention. And again, this is not one focus of the night. I'm going to move forward, aside from Jericho and Omega's match. Who really caught the attention 2017 as a wrestler? I'm going to pull up a name here. Keith Lee. Now, this big fella can do suicide dive, and he's close to 400 pounds. I mean, he's wrestled with guys by the likes of Matt Riddle. Matt Riddle is an indie phenomenon. But if he gets to World Wrestling Entertainment, how will his success carry on? I can tell you right now, I've seen Matt Riddle wrestle 3 or 4 times now. That doesn't make me the all-overseeing expert on this dude, but my gosh, when you wrestle big names like Jeff Cobb and you wrestle on a really prominent promotion called Wrestling Revolver that runs out of Clive, Iowa, and not only Clive, Iowa, but, I mean, it works in Ohio. It works everywhere. I got to say, I'm pretty impressed with what I've seen. from Wrestling Revolver. And I know I'm switching from topic to topic because we were talking about Keith Lee. The big guy can not only work, but he can work. Joey Ryan, very nice guy. I met him at a Wrestling Revolver show. Now, there are certain people that will say, why did you switch from Keith Lee to Joey Ryan? Well, to be honest with you guys, the dick flipping, the dick suplex, kind of funny. Some people may say, well, now wrestling is already fake, and he's kind of insulting the entire wrestling business. Well, to be honest with you, Joey Ryan will fit in perfect with Chikara. He fits anywhere because why? His name is a draw. And when you have a guy whose name is a draw, guess what you get? Moolah. And trust me, he was nice enough to sign an 8x10. Not only that, but his antics in the ring, you know, whether you're a fan or not, they did draw attention of the year 2017 and the year before that and the year before that. I mean, if you combine Val Venus's gimmick and Rick DeMotto Martel minus the perfume, you would get, I guess, Joey Ryan. And speaking of getting attention, I mean, the dark horses of the year, the besties in the world, Matt Fitchett and Davey Vega. Those two were in a war for the Wrestling Revolver Tag Team Championships in a ladder match at Wrestling Revolver and Clive. And not only that, I actually watched them in NWL when they were in NWL St. Louis. And I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, but forgive me if I didn't watch their careers earlier. They're nice. I'm not basing my attention on the fact that they're nice, but they're pretty cool. So I know I'm circling around names and saying which one caught my attention, which one didn't. In NXT, there's a group of people who I pay attention to. They're better known as Sanity. Nikki Cross, Killian Dane, Eric Young. I apologize if I don't remember the other members of Sanity, but this group, if they were to meet the Wyatts, I can only imagine how much fans would mark the fuck out if they ever make it to main roster, which they probably will in 2000, maybe 2018, maybe 2019 if they don't get injured or something doesn't happen. But I really thoroughly enjoy watching Nikki Cross. Why? Because look at what she's done. She hasn't really won any championship yet, but if it's her time, I really firmly believe that she should have been the one to defeat Kairi Sane in that fatal four-way at War Games in Houston. But I digress. The reason why I pay attention to Sanity is because you can just play out scenarios in your own head if you were to book them. If they were to be booked on main roster, where would you book them? Well, wherever Bray Wyatt is, that is a genius plan when the Wyatts get back together and hopefully would get somebody to play crazy, you know, or Sister Abigail. Because you can imagine what craziness would go down if Nikki Cross was to go one-on-one with Crazy Mary Dobson. I mean, imagine that. It really didn't catch my attention this year, but they were forced upon us. Oh, that's a good question. That is a damn good question. Who was forced upon? Okay, when you say forced upon, are you talking about Mandy Rose, Sarah Logan, John Cena? That could be. Okay, so you're referring to the whole Absolution and Riot Squad. I think that there's one instance where you can take a good look at Absolution and Riot Squad, and you say, which of the two, you know, stand out the most? Well, I'd say the one that stands out the most probably be the Riot Squad, because as I said on my show, Liv Morgan only stands out to the viewing public. Thank you, Enzo Amore, and thank you to her quick recovery in personal life and going out with Tyler Bate right after she found out that Enzo cheated, which is, it shouldn't be a big surprise. I mean, Enzo's a nice guy and all, but when you're separated and your loved one, your significant other's in Florida, I don't know the whole situation, but here's what I'm going to tell you. No one cares. And only the true marks that really stand the fuck out will sit there and tell me, Liv Morgan is a great competitor. Really? Because I didn't see anything past the blonde hair and big boobs. I mean, she's basically a duplicate of fucking Carmella. They both come from the East Coast. They both wear leopard pants. Well, one of them does. But they wear the similar style clothes in the ring. They're in-ring style. Carmella, is she less aggressive? I wouldn't know. Because she's got a submission maneuver, so does Liv Morgan. So mirroring gimmicks kind of piss me off, because if there's no rhyme or reason to have them on main roster other than, gee, why not call these two up so they can form a group? This isn't American Idol. And why am I getting pissed off a little tad bit early before Off the Rails Uncensored hits? Because here it is, I'll just say it. Sarah Logan, I talk like this, missing from my forehead, that's just my head and holes. That's what, I'm sorry, when she talks, that is what I see. In my, if I were to close my eyes, if I was a blind guy, if I were wearing sunglasses and looked like Ray Charles, and I heard Sarah Logan talk, my immediate thought is, oh shit, run for the hills. And I know people are laughing because, oh, well, she makes money while I'm sitting on a podcast talking about randomized shit. All I can tell you is, Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville, on the other hand, they got attention, you're talking about them, so it must be important. Here's what I'm going to tell you. From observing those two on Raw's side of things, they're not ready. How would I know that? Because they look nervous. Mandy Rose looks like she's about to shit her pants. Every time she comes to the ring, does she look calm, cool, and collected? No. She got plucked from NXT, where they do NXT live tours, so she's used to touring. So that is kind of an advantage against amongst the other NXT people, right? Not really. I mean, I much would rather prefer to have seen Vanessa Bourne, like I told you, or put veterans in place that would have worked with Paige, like Alicia Fox and Mickey James. That group would have worked out a lot better. We're like, oh, we can't turn Mickey heel. Really? So why am I focusing on the female groups again? Well, here it is. Paige comes back, despite all the drama and all the bullshit that was done beforehand, willing to give her another chance, right? Oh, here comes Paige, and she's got caked makeup. Is that any different from when she left? No. What I'm saying is, you're making a woman who is really showing ring rust. You are allowing her back in the ring. And what am I talking about? The live house show at Madison Square Garden, where Sasha was supposed to give her a drop kick. She didn't turn. For those of us who have taken a drop kick, whether it be in training, whether it be anywhere, is there any way to prepare for one that goes right to your shoulder? You can brace yourself all you want, but that shit's going to hurt. Well, really, you know, I read through the article and it said that Paige got back to the hotel and Sasha came and they said, Sasha sucks, Sasha sucks. Do you people not remember what Paige was capable of? She was able to stand on her own two feet without two, you know, people that really don't matter at this point. Sonya Deville, so she's the muscle of the group. This is what I gather from this. She's the muscle. And Mandy Rose is just eye candy because she really can't fucking work. Neither can Liv Morgan. Liv Morgan if I remember, memory serves me correctly, got her ass handed to her. Well, of course, everyone gets their ass handed to them when they face Asuka. But I guarantee you, Nikki Cross could beat the flying fuck out of Liv Morgan. She could beat the fuck out of Mandy Rose. Is there any rhyme or reason for me when I'm getting upset? No. Am I knocking these women? Yes, because there's a lot of reasons why people should focus on what will become of Absolution, what will become of the Riot Squad after the Women's Battle Royal. So should I be worried about two women groups that really don't fucking matter? Obviously they do, because people, they're not liking that angle. They're not liking the build, because it's the same. It is the same shtick on both ends of the spectrum. Raw and SmackDown Live have apps, you know, they have two women groups who run roughshod on the main roster women. You have SmackDown Live Charlotte Flair that constantly gets attacked by Ruby Riott. You've got Alexa Bliss. The only difference is she's not getting attacked by, well, she did get attacked by Absolution. And now the entire women's locker room gets involved for Monday Night Raw. We kind of have the feel that there is a dynamic in the women's division. I get what they're trying to come across with, but why? The question is, when you get chosen and you're not really fucking full-blown ready, but you're saying, oh, it's not based on my looks, really? It's not based on looks? You're not eye candy for Vince? Because, I mean, look at Mandy Rose, a beautiful girl. You look at Liv Morgan, very pretty. But other than that, very pretty and beautiful doesn't give you skill in the ring. Yes, you can take bumps and you can do moves that people have never heard of. Does that make you relevant in WWE? Let me answer that question. No, it fucking doesn't. Because people, when they sit there and say, okay, well, this guy's spewing negativity, it makes him look bad because he's not a part of the company, makes those people more important because he's giving emphasis on their persona, on their in-ring ability. I'm not a fucking booker. I'm not a fucking talent scout, but I can tell you, there's got to be other reasons as to why they were picked. I mean, being blonde and beautiful can't be the only reasons, right? Do they give any flavor to the groups that they're respectively in? No. And why no? As I said, you could pick Lacey Evans, who is a perfect fucking dynamic for a heel group. You could have picked Vanessa Bourne to be the muscle. My God, the woman headbutts people in the ring when she faced off with many people. And why Mercedes Martinez was not considered? Some people say, oh, well, she was sloppy. She wasn't very good. In a group, she may have done better. See, when people say, I don't have the answers to the problem, how would I solve it? Here's my response. When you watch women's wrestling, it's already shit on by a lot of people thinking, oh, women's wrestling, you know, that bra and panty stuff, or oh, that stuff that they used to do in the mud pit. So I'm sorry, folks, that this whole segment based off of what I focused on in 2017. Paige's return versus Asuka's first stint on the Monday Night Raw roster. Asuka definitely has some impact. But the reason why Paige gets so much attention is because, well, I'll just say it. Her personal life kind of overshadows her in-ring. Her in-ring, as of the moment, she's gotten hurt. Sasha's gotten hurt. There's been a lot of miscues. And I give it time. I'll give her 6 months. You know, just say whether I have adjusted to watching her or not. So what is the point of comparing Paige and Asuka? I'll tell you. Asuka going to Raw main roster gave it dynamic, so they added even more dynamic by having Paige. But the two women that are with her really don't stand the prayer without her. I get it. You know, maybe Sonya Deville could be a great solo. I guess when Baszler comes up to Megan and Ronda Rousey appears, which there's been rumors speculating around that Ronda Rousey would be a part of the Women's Battle Royal. That she would win it all and face Charlotte Flair and start a feud with the Four Horsewomen. Now, there's different plans every week, folks, but if those two on SmackDown Live lose Ruby Riott, Sarah Logan might have a future, but not really, depending on how well you gimmick her up. You don't have to gimmick somebody up to make them a success. What I'm saying is Paige would have been much better off by herself rather than making a splash saying, "Us Absolution." Now, granted, I don't believe the fact that Asuka getting attacked by three women was a bright idea. And what do I mean by this? When the locker room runs out as a story, you know, they bail out of the fucking locker room, they come to Asuka's aid. Not once, but twice when Stephanie had that huge announcement and everything just stopped about the Women's Battle Royal, which was a huge focal point in 2017, the way to end the year and say, hey, you know, this is going to be the way things work. This is the way things are going to happen. That's great. That's a huge breakthrough for the women in 2017. But back to the point. So I'm not going to focus entirely on Paige's return and Asuka's Raw roster debut. But since I'm on the subject, I'm going to focus a little bit on them because here's the deal. 2017 started off kind of slow. Roman, you know, I'm going to go backwards for a minute. Roman Reigns wins the Royal Rumble. That guaranteed him a shot at the Universal Championship. Now, earlier that night, lost to Kevin Owens with Chris Jericho in a Shark Tank above the ring. So, how does this affect the universe of wrestling? Didn't affect it at all. However, you know, the crowd's reaction was, gee, you wasted an entrant. Guys, Roman's kind of a locker room leader. He's the most consistent guy that shows up to work. I'm not, you know, a huge fan of his, but I do like the guy. He's a nice guy. Not a big fan of his in-ring work, but here's the thing. Later on in the year, you would see Roman Reigns versus John Cena, who is the ultimate best of the passing of the torch. Supposedly occurred kind of like how Ultimate Warrior and Hogan did back in the 90s. So, let's see. The pay-per-view that comes after Rumble. I mean, there's several sub-pay-per-views. There's No Mercy. There was Extreme Rules. It was barely extreme at all. Oh, yes. Hell in a Cell. The very first ever women's Hell in a Cell match. Sasha Banks versus Charlotte Flair. Oh, the very first Money in the Bank women's ladder match. Even though the match wasn't really all that great, some people debate with what Ellsworth did. I don't give a fuck because he's like, Carmella was the dark horse. And I said, what if Carmella wins? What if Carmella wins? She won, and though she hasn't cashed it in yet, here's what I'm going to tell you. Give it time, it'll happen. That seemed to be the focal point everybody predicting when she won the Money in the Bank briefcase, what she was going to do with it. And I strictly said, Carmella is one of those competitors that you least expect to succeed. And I hope she wins the women's championship, because it'd be nice to see her, not a carousel of champions, but I believe that she's ready, because she really knows how to work a crowd. So, here's what I'm going to tell you. 2017 was the year of, oh, that happened. Okay, cool. My goodness. Much like yesterday's show, we're going to have about close to under an hour's worth of an opinion, not just an opinion based, but basically an overall observation of what I feel should be displayed on a platter, but through my brainwaves, what I am. Look in my eyes, what do you see? The cost of something I would be. I know your anger, I know your dreams. Basically what I'm thinking. So I gotta say, 2017, as a fan, what I witnessed and saw was the major four. It had always been a dream of mine to go to all four pay-per-views, even if, you know, some of you thought in your head, oh, man, why did he do that? That was a waste of money. He could have gone to all the indie events he wanted. That's something I want to touch base with you on. The indies has become a sensation because the moments that you claim WWE has failed to capitalize on, do realize that without the big fish talk about, you wouldn't have anybody to fry. Now, some may consider me a casual WWE fan, since that's pretty much what I base my conversations on or discussions about, so here's what I'll tell you. When I decided to venture out and go to the major four, I didn't realize, you know, that most of the time I'd be going to the person that I had an up-and-down friendship with, and I don't know, we consider ourselves casual business partners. I don't know if you'd consider us that, but a guy by the name of Jake Patty. And I went to the Royal Rumble in San Antonio, Texas. We also went to WrestleMania in Orlando, Florida. It was an interesting run, if not that. We had some interesting guests on our show in 2016, I believe, which led into 2017. Boy, man, we had a lot of interesting moments. Point is, when I went to all these four pages, I realized something. If I wanted to do what I wanted to do, and truly wanted to do, and that was get my first title belt, and I know that makes me sound like an Uber Mart, I never would post a picture, but I just love to have it in my possession. I didn't get to do that, but I did get to see some awesome wrestling surrounding it, too. We spent time at a Wrestling Revolver show at WrestleMania. Now, granted, I had to pull some strings and get shit done financially, and basically what I mean by that is kind of an up and down battle. Things were fun. Yeah. Were things fun with when Jake was around? Here's what I'm going to tell you. I wanted to carry on the legacy of Wrestle Radio because I actually gave a damn about it. Now, when people tell you that I talk a lot of shit on wrestlers and all this stuff, no, see, when I say it directly to the person, then that kind of defeats the purpose of me talking shit, correct? What am I getting at? There's a lot of feeling between me and a certain someone. But that's neither here nor there. When I went to All Four this year, I accomplished something that practically every fan dreams of doing. Not every fan, but certain fans dream of doing. And that includes being able to say, hey, I went to a lot of different arenas, I saw a lot of different faces, and I went through a lot of sacrifices to go. And I mean, I work just like every single one of you, and in the hopes that I can keep doing this, because some say I was a failed manager, I didn't really get it my all, I didn't stick with it. I was able to go to Royal Rumble, WrestleMania. Let's see what comes before Survivor Series. Oh, yeah. Believe what comes before Survivor Series is, let's see here. Can't quite put my finger on it. Ah, yeah, SummerSlam. Now, some say, well, how can you afford this shit? How can you, a regular Joe Schmo, afford this shit? Probably could have saved a lot more money if I didn't go to all four of these things. But you know the saying, you've only got one life, so you better live it to the best of your ability. My explanation as to why I started talking off the cuff about rumors and this, that, the other is because I, for one, will always stand on my own two feet. I always back up what I say. Some of you may dispute that, but what I'm going to tell you is proof is in the fucking pudding. You want to look me up? Look me up. I managed against Trevor Murdoch. He does actually remember me. That is the biggest name that I have managed against. And now you're like, well, why is it a big deal? He was only in WWE for a brief hiccup. The man has a lot of connections, and he's in good standing with WWE. Now, back to the main focus at hand that I was talking about. Some of you may ask, well, how did you get all this money to go these places? It's called working a job, cleaning a house, busting my ass to be the best person I can possibly be. Sounds like an army commercial, but you know what? It's true. I work and clean the house, you know, for $100 a pop, right? I work at a job that pays me $100 to $400 on average per paycheck. Where do I work? I'm not going to disclose that information. That is for personal, private use only. So what I got to say to you is, I can afford it because I got a little thing called a membership to Delta, a membership to Southwest. I should also get one to American and maybe even cheap. I even got a membership to Spirit. I have never ridden those airlines before, but I will tell you, it was an adventure every time that I went on one of these trips. The worst adventure, though, minor decathlon. It was a minor negative incident. I got into a wreck with somebody in Houston. Long story short, we still have our lives. That's the main value purpose of it. I learned my lesson when in Texas, just get Uber Don't rent a car unless you're working an event. End of story. So, I mean, there's plenty of adventures, like barely having enough to get home from Oklahoma to Kansas City from San Antonio. That drive was like 12 and a half hours. It was 11 and a half hours to Houston. I'm never fucking doing that shit again. The plane, you know, being in the backyard, the plane from Kansas City to St. Louis, that wasn't too bad. I mean, it's a 45-minute plane ride, but I actually had to go through three planes, cause New York to Kansas City, Kansas City to St. Louis for Money in the Bank. What else? Oh, yeah. You know, I didn't go to the Raw and SmackDown Live after SummerSlam, but I did for some weird reason in Orlando. I was really cool to see guys like Finn Balor, guys like Shinsuke Nakamura. It's pretty badass to see them at Survivor Series finally facing off one another. Oh, it was such a treat, you know, going to all four. You know why? Because not just WWE, I went to Evolve in San Antonio 2 days in a row. I went to Wrestling Revolver at WrestleMania. And I gotta say, it was pretty cool to see or meet Zack Sabre Jr., a guy like Matthew Riddle. By the way, man, pretty awesome. Pretty awesome wrestler. So, I say that because he's a product of Monster Factory. Not only is he a product of Monster Factory, the dude's fucking awesome. So, did I make a mistake of going to all major four instead of saving my money? Some of you may say yes, some of you may say, I don't care. I made my decision, I had a good time. You can't go through life in pro wrestling just saying, hey, you know, I'm going to cheer for this guy and I don't care what you all say, when in the back of your mind you probably fucking do. That's the next area subject. That's the next area of subject matter that I'm going to discuss with you all, and that is cheering and booing in wrestling now versus back then. Back then, you could have a clear-cut face and a clear-cut heel. Now, I don't know what to tell you. It goes by region. Who cheers for whom? Who doesn't cheer for whom? Like Roman Reigns and John Cena is the perfect example. Thanks to those two, fans are now split. They don't know who to fucking cheer for. Is it their fault? It's based on the crowd's engaged reaction with what they do. Let's go Cena, Cena sucks. Let's go Cena, Roman sucks. You both suck, you both suck, was the initial reaction of a New York crowd. All right, actually Los Angeles was the one that started that chant. It goes by region. To answer your question, it goes by region. The Midwest, they love, they cherish, they cheer John Cena and Roman Reigns. The East Coast, that depends on the mood they're in, whether they decide to have amnesia or not. I say that nicely because Philly is brutal, so is Jersey, so is Rhode Island. So if anywhere in the East Coast that they fucking cheer, they're going to be brutally honest with you if you're not brutally honest with them. I'll give you a good example. New Day at SummerSlam basically made a farce version of Empire State of Mind. I think it was Xavier Woods or Kofi Kingston saying how New York smelled so bad they smelled like sewer. And then went on with the chorus of the song, and basically New York cheered his ass. Seth Rollins got cheered, and isn't he supposed to be the heel of the match versus John Cena for the WWE Universal Championship, or back then it was the WWE Championship? Kind of confusing, right? I don't care who you cheer for, just as long as you're not a condescending asshole about it. I cheer for this person, and so should you. That's what bugs me about this year, or any year, really, because you can't enjoy a show. I dealt with one in Houston who was a really cool dude, but dear God, now I know why bitching is not a wise thing to do in public. After the show, cool, you can bitch as much as you want. But during the show, if I hear you talk like a podcast host during the whole event, they should have had this. Oh, it ruined the whole fucking show. You're ruining WWE. Then why, oh demoted one, did you buy a ticket to a show that you know you're going to hate? So you might as well just stay at home and watch the network and throw something at your TV and knock it out. I don't give a fuck. I've seen some funny fan clips of a guy or a fan that got pissed because Roman lost the title, you know, to Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania 31. What does this have to do with 2017? Fans really have not changed. Can't do builds with this group. You just can't. Because if you do, fans will be like, oh, they should have done that last week. They should have put the Shield together the last week. Impatient much? All I can tell you is the fans this year, I love you to death. I love, you know, I'm a fan too, but I'm not a pay grade above anybody. I just like enjoying the fucking show, and if I bitch about something, that's because I care. What I also notice about fans is another subject for another day, but hey, when fans react to a certain someone, Michael Cole, listen to the WWE Universe, getting, you know, reacting and just polarizing reaction. Motherfucker, do you know what a polarizing reaction was if it fucking hits you in the face? A polarizing reaction would be is Stone Cold Steve Austin walks through the curtain, walks through near Gorilla, goes outside the fucking curtain, and you hear the biggest pop. That is a polarizing reaction, not let's go Cena sucks. That bullshit is not a polarizing reaction, Michael Cole. And if you sit there and say it one more time, I guarantee you, without hesitation, since you don't give a fuck and you like making fun of people in a subtle way on live TV, then here's what I'm going to tell you. You're a professional. You must be doing something right. I commend you, sir, on announcing for over 21 years plus on a show in which you have no clue what wrestling moves are, so you just make things up because you don't know what you're saying or talking about. But, you know, the company likes that because they have some clueless wonders and they have some people who actually know what they are discussing. For example, when a guy gives a butterfly suplex, not just a butterfly suplex, but there are moves that they have done in their days at PWG or CZW or prior wrestling organizations that Michael Cole has no clue about. Maybe he does, he just doesn't really give a fuck because it wasn't stressed upon him to cover actual move names instead of making jumbled up jargon. Mauro Ranallo. I'm getting on the subject of announcers because talking about fans, I love you guys. There's some of you that really piss me off, and there's some of you that are really fucking cool. I love you. By the way, thank you to our listeners in Norway, Australia, Japan, all of you. Canada, we love you here at Wrestle Radio and also Off the Rails and Censored. So here's the deal. Now that I'm on the subject of announcers, Byron Saxton, kind of a coolest wonder as well. Really funny, though, when he's with Corey Graves and Tom Phillips. That's a good trio right there. Corey Graves works back and forth, does a job really well. knows what he's discussing because he actually was in the ring and knew what he was doing. No, he got concussed. It doesn't really matter. Here's what I've got to say to you all. The reason why I'm back and forth with Corey Graves, I'm not back and forth in a bad way. It's just like, man, this guy really knows how to operate as the heel color commentator. Why? He's got a cover for Michael Cole and Booker T. I mean, imagine how Booker T's gotten somewhat better. And then there are times where you sit there and you're like, oh, man, here we go again. What the style of announcing that Booker G does, is it color commentating? Is it confusing? Is it a what the fuck? I mean, is there any classification for that on live air? I mean, miss Jerry Lawler and JR, but we can't go back in time and get a time capsule and make Jerry Lawler eat healthier. Which I'm pretty sure he is doing, because look, he's on the panel at the major pay-per-views, and he's doing a damn good job. But as far as announcing goes, I love Nigel McGuinness. I am infatuated with Mauro Ranallo in a good way, not in a sick, creepy, psychotic way. I'm glad that he's back on WWE programming. I am happy to see him in NXT. So announcer-wise, worst announcer by far for World Wrestling Entertainment is Michael Cole. Is his voice kind of a staple front, though, for the company? Yeah, you could say that because he's the longer tenured one. He's outlasted Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler. No one can ever replace that. I'm pretty sure that he knows what he's doing because, like I said, I commend you on staying with the company for 20-plus years. Like you said in an interview, you must be doing something right. Well, there's also a stretch to that. Michael Cole is not the main focus of the announcers. You've got Corey Graves. I don't know what you would classify Booker T as other than a legend and a really respectable dude. And all of that, he's a Hall of Famer. So say what you will about Booker, but I like the guy. He's pretty cool, pretty nice guy. Corey Graves, by far, is the saving grace of both SmackDown Live and Monday Night Raw. I wish JBL would come back, although they made him kind of – there's no clear-cut heel announcer other than Corey Graves, and it's kind of amusing to me when Big Cass shook his hand. But here's the thing. The only setbacks of Corey Graves, there is none. He sees brutally honest with how he feels about a certain somebody that he has had major conflict with. The only problem is, when you're in his spot, how do you deal with Enzo Amore? Switching gears here. Enzo Amore, let's see. 2015, roughly around there, decides to go through NXT Developmental, never worked as a wrestler in his life. He is, by far, you know, one of the most up and down superstars in WWE right now. Just finds a way to get attention to himself, negative and positive. Positive would be he finally captured gold in WWE. But at what cost? Because now his personal life, yeah, he's found out he's cheating on his girl Liv Morgan, doesn't tip a stripper, you know, draws his signature that he claims looks like EA, but it looks like a penis on the state of Delaware's license. Enzo, his mouth is what gets him in trouble. But if I'm here to point out people's flaws, then this podcast can get real boring real quick. His positives were that he drew a fucking audience when he first came on the scene with Big Cass and Carmella. You don't stick with the group forever. And you know that in wrestling, they're going to give you opportunity to flourish as a solo or as a tag team. And for a while, you know, for about 6-7 months on Monday Night Raw, he and Cass they did make impact with showing up to Monday Night Raw. They faced the Dudley Boys. But really, in 2017, Enzo just kind of fell off the face of the earth. Until he went to 205 Live, had a beef with Neville. Neville left kind of partially because of the things that happened between him and the company. His dispute was, I'm not being taken seriously, so obviously you guys can shove it. He was a pretty big name. But anyways, Enzo, a lot of you say, well, he runs his mouth. Yes and yes. But is merchandise, his past merchandise certified G, his past merchandise, he come out with catchphrases, because if you take a look at him, look at what he did for Cass. Okay, Cass was held back. I agree, sir. But without Enzo, Cass just kind of just drifted away as well. Is he coming back to Royal Rumble? I believe so, because he's been doing really well in his rehabilitation. I don't know the exact time frame, but could we see an Enzo and Cass reunion anytime soon? I don't know, sir. I don't know Lyle from Elgin, Illinois. To answer your question, sir, I don't see that occurring just yet, because we just had a Shield reunion and looked what happened. It's not because they're on the label that are known as Monday Night Raw, injury-prone roster. I do believe, I know I could have sworn that Cass did say some nice things about how Enzo's work ethic is. Now, am I defending the little fuck about what he does? Because, look, he still interacts with the fans. He, despite all his flaws, will still sign autographs for little kids. And that fits well with me as a fan, because I don't care if you don't autograph me. I'm an adult. It's really all about the kids. That is our main audience as workers. And Enzo does a really good job of reaching out to them. I wish you'd given them a better example, but they don't know at 4 years old. They don't know at 6, 7 years old how the personal life of a worker is. They could care less. But I'm telling you, if social media was any far stretch of the imagination as to how things have worked out this year for Enzo, his little war with Corey Graves, yeah, that caught a lot of attention. His storied love affair with Nia Jax, I love that. I love that angle. It's pretty funny where he keeps getting interrupted. Enzo's a draw, whether you love him or hate him. He's a fucking draw. And for those of you who fail to see that, I got to tell you, pay attention to numbers. Without Enzo in the cruiserweight division, oh my. Okay, so you have Brian Kendrick and you have Jack Gallagher. You know, it was a vicious headbutt. But other than that, that division is dead. You've got a dynamic face now, I guess, in Tony Nese and Cedric Alexander. So, yeah, 2010, speaking of the cruiserweights, so you had Rich Swann, who was arrested for beating up another wrestler, girlfriend, Sue Young. It was a domestic incident. He beat her ass and brought her back to the car, and then he got reported and then arrested. I don't think he has a future in WWE anymore, but unless they give third and fourth chances, because if he comes back, you know, you're going to have a lot of complaints like you normally do. Also, I'm going to move a little forward because I got 29 minutes to discuss this. They cut out pyro during the shows because a lot of people were saying all WWE is nothing but a glorified company that just uses pyro to get people's attention and their big names that really don't work well anymore. Well, that statement's kind of true, but let me just set the record straight. When you have a generation full of millennials, does their influence speak volumes when it comes to WWE? They don't know who The Undertaker is or was until they saw clips of him on the network. And not just clips of The Undertaker, but pyro, and, you know, that's what made the show kind of fun, is to hear the loud explosions and see the different things that they can do at pay-per-views. I mean, come on. Also, we didn't have a split fucking fan base. You either booed one person, you cheered one person. Call me old-fashioned, but isn't that how wrestling works? So now, the adaptation of the millennials, meaning their parents can complain about anything and everything, I don't like the way that so-and-so was driven through a table. You guys ought to outlaw tables. My child tried this at home. You're going to have dumbasses. You're going to have a variety of fans. That's the beauty part. Because the more complaints you have, the more you know you're doing things right. By variety, you have, like Sylvester said, Sylvester Fox, who was a guest on the show at Wrestle Radio, said, fans don't want to be considered to being fans anymore. They want to be in the know. And there's nothing wrong with being in the know. However, there is something wrong with just not being able to sit down and say, I knew this was going to happen because it said so in the spoilers. You know what I have to say to you for people who try and ruin shit? Like, for example, a former compadre of mine ruined the Cruiserweight Classic. I already watched the Cruiserweight Classic, or I already read what was going to occur because the results were filmed. Same thing almost happened for the Mae Young Classic. For those of you fans who like to sit and spoil shit, please sit down, shut the fuck up, drink your beer, drink whatever you're drinking, eat whatever you're eating, and let me and others who like to be surprised, even though we know some things are going to happen because you like to spoil it. Are you the type that like to spoil Star Wars or like to spoil other things? I like to enjoy my wrestling, please. Just like certain fans, they like to spoil it. Honestly, you're probably the kid, oh, that magic trick wasn't real. He just pulled, see how he pulled the rabbit out of the hat? If you start explaining step by step what happened, boy, you know, you're missing the boat. You really are. And here's the thing. It's cool that you read on news what's going to happen, but then how do you expect to enjoy a show? I read news because I'm a broadcast journalist. Did I have a degree in journalism? No. Well, what makes me assume the title of broadcast journalist? Because I'm broadcasting to a wide variety audience from around the world going on in wrestling news, such as, I'm giving you it right now, The Undertaker is looking great. Will he be at WrestleMania 34? I don't know. Will John Cena be his opponent? I don't know. But you can leave up the possibilities to something that's awesome with The Undertaker. I'm glad to see that he's back in full health. Maybe he might be able to wrestle again. Also, there are rumors about Finn Balor supposedly being tag team champion with Seth Rollins. I wish that rumor wasn't a rumor. I wish it was true. Because, honestly, I'm going to touch on the subject of Jason Jordan. Now, he falls under the category of what fans like to call being shoved down our throats. When you have a talent like Jason Jordan, who works hard, you know, has been working hard since the days he was in NXT alongside Corey Graves. Not just Corey Graves, guys like Neville, guys like Kevin Owens, guys like Sami Zayn. Difficult to cheer him when he's not with Chad Gable, when he was with American Alpha, who's basically the babied up version or the backdoor version of Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas. Kind of like the Steiner brothers with American Alpha, but Jason Jordan was brought onto Raw. It was a stupid fucking angle with him being Kurt Angle's supposed son. The WWE got a lot of flack for that because you will actually have fans with the IQ of 12 who actually believe that Jason Jordan is, in fact, the illegitimate child of Kurt Angle. that's not why some of us are upset. When you have to make last-minute changes, turning Jason Jordan heel was put on hold. I mean, come on, people were already booing his ass. And like the great John Cena says, why would you turn me heel when I'm already heel? This is my version of the heel turn. He's turning his heel. I don't really care anymore because, honestly, I just grew numb to what John Cena says or does in the ring because, you know, he's hated, he's loved. Point is, he's making money. Jason Jordan, does he fall into the category of being like John Cena? Again, your questions, Kyle from... look what it is, Orange County, New Jersey. Let me answer your question, sir. I don't believe that Jason Jordan falls under that category to an extent. What he does fall under the category of is, let's pull a name out of the hat. This is last minute. We have nobody else on the fucking roster that would substantiate as being a future tag team champion. Now, granted, I may have missed a few people or a few subjects. I think I covered everything except for, oh yes, the Royal Rumble, which I will not be attending, which I really don't feel like posting on Facebook about and leaving a sobbing status about. But I will tell you, the Royal Rumble is going to be highly interesting because you have some big names returning. Will The Undertaker be in the Royal Rumble? I do not know. But I do know that the very first women's Royal Rumble occurring in Philly is going to be badass. I cannot wait. I mean, you've got, oh yeah, thank you for reminding me. Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, Shane McMahon. I'm not a big fan of Shane's in-ring work. He's remembered for being a glorified stunt double. Basically, if him and Mick Foley were to parallel each other's career, I respect Mick Foley, I respect Shane. I just don't, you know, after the whole Hell in a Cell incident, you know, with the airbags at WrestleMania 32, not really big. I mean, I'm glad Shane jumps off stuff, and I'm pretty sure his strikes look like crap. But point is, him working Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens is pointless when you've got other guys on the roster like a Dolph Ziggler, an AJ Styles, whose premier focus now is on Jinder Mahal. Not really up to just saying, okay, Shane McMahon is working Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens just fine. I mean, the story, this build is working great. No, Daniel Bryan, it was reported, was seen running ropes at a house show. I miss that guy being in the ring. Do you know why, ladies and gentlemen? Because that man can actually work versus what Shane is. It's stupid. Shane had his moments. It was called the Attitude Era when he worked with his father against his father. You know, there's here and there moments where Shane has come back. And I, like I said, I respect him as a human being. Just as a worker, I have a difference of opinion. If he's able to work the boys and the boys, they respect him, great. But at the same token, what purpose does it serve you if you're, you know, Shane's in great shape, but at the same token, why is he working The Undertaker at WrestleMania 32? Can anyone answer me that question? Why is he working AJ Styles at WrestleMania? Is it a matter of, okay, Stephanie's got some hold of the company, so he has to fight for daddy's attention? Or, I mean, I'm trying to figure this out because there's got to be some deaths on SmackDown Live roster as to why all of a sudden Shinsuke Nakamura and Randy Orton are a pair. Why all of a sudden the attack on Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn? Kevin Owens and Shane are supposed to be feuding, which lead into a future possible Triple H and Kevin Owens. I don't know. I don't write this shit, but I think it's kind of annoying that Shane finds himself in the spotlight when he, you know, there's other guys that are capable, they're really capable of doing the job – to face off with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. So it boggles my mind how sometimes, okay, guys like Daniel Bryan are not cleared by the company itself because they realize he carried the company on his back for literally almost a full year. And that was without the help of his brother-in-law, because I'm going to bring this into fruition. Daniel Bryan by himself could carry the WWE on his back, on his toes, on whatever you wanted to carry. The guy is a workhorse. Dolph Ziggler, the man is also extremely talented. And why did he walk out? Because the United States title was getting so boring. I mean, it kind of has lost relevancy, kind of like how the Intercontinental Championship lost relevancy when it constantly circled the waist. Well, basically, according to Rolling Stone's Wrestler of the Year, The Miz. Did it lose relevance? No. The Miz is a very intense competitor. Why he's on Monday Night Raw is because that show needed some help. And I mean immense help. But again, Shane McMahon taking the spotlight away from certain talents like a Shinsuke Nakamura, like an AJ Styles. It is funny to me how people will dispute that, oh, Shane's a great worker. I just, from my perspective, he's not a bad person. He's not bad on the mic. You take all the weapons away and make it a straight-up wrestling match. Shane is like, I don't know, somebody from ECW, and that could mean some of those guys who have technical skills like a Jerry Lynn, let's see here. I would say if you want to go technical, you would say Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero. Some of those guys aren't around anymore. I mean, Eddie Guerrero's not around, obviously. Guys, when they can't do anything without weapons and they go into straight-up wrestling matches, AJ Styles wrestled circles around Shane McMahon. AJ Styles makes anyone look good. I mean, for fuck's sakes, look at what he did with Jinder Mahal. Jinder Mahal worked really hard, you know, transformed his body and stuff. But at the end of the day, if you look at AJ Styles, he made a guy like Brock Lesnar look decent at Survivor Series when it was the champion versus champion match. And not only that, when it comes to guys like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, you're looking at two premier athletes who should have been on the SmackDown Live Survivor Series team, but oh no, I understand Shinsuke Nakamura. Randy Orton obviously would be a definite part of that. Why SmackDown Live had Rusev, I'll never know. And I don't think he was even a part of the team, but why they had Sami and Kevin come out means they obviously are a huge, important part of SmackDown Live's roster. The whole bit with Shane McMahon's getting stale. The fans can tell you that. I can tell you that. Like I said, we're not a part of creative, so how can we be part of the solution? Well, I watched pretty much every episode of Monday Night Raw and SmackDown Live with a best friend of mine who sometimes, you know, we would debate about certain things, but not in a violent kind of way. It's just, why did this happen? How did this happen? Why is this occurring? Let's just say it was a clusterfuck for WWE because of all the injuries they had. You had Sasha getting hurt. You had Paige returning and then getting hurt. You have Ambrose, supposed to be a huge part of Royal Rumble, gets chunked out. So does that mean Jason Jordan now takes the reins? No pun intended. Obviously, the fill-in for the Shield was not what everyone chose, but now that Ambrose is hurt, look what we have. You have Jason Jordan, who makes no sense, but they had no choice Because it was a last-minute scratch. I mean, who would you have chosen? I mean, you have Finn Balor, you have Goldust, you have R-Truth, you have there's a variety of people that say, I can do the job too. I mean, I can take Ambrose. Of course you want the guy's spot who was supposed to win the Royal Rumble, right? How do I know this? Because, come on, Rollins, he didn't win the Rumble, but he won the Money in the Bank briefcase. Ambrose, let's see, he's been the Intercontinental Champion. He's been the World Heavyweight Champion. He's been Tag Team Champion. He's been United States Champion. So, what's left for Ambrose to conquer but the Royal Rumble and getting a shot at the WWE Universal Championship? And look who it's around the waist of. Brock Lesnar, who eventually, maybe not, will not, he won't leave, but well, speaking of Brock Lesnar, since I got 12 minutes left to rant about this, so he's a part-time champion. He shows up when he wants to. I mean, wouldn't you, for the amount of money that he's making? I don't like him because he's a part-time champion, some say. I don't like him because he only shows up when he wants to. That's the unfortunate side effect of watching just WWE. See, there's other champions that are like, okay, Matt Riddle. There's the besties in the world. They won the Wrestling Evolver Tag Team Championships. There's a lot of things outside of WWE that might make you feel better as a wrestling fan, rather than just focusing on one group of people as wrestlers. Because Brock Lesnar brings about the discussion of, he's not even there, so how can we have a champion that's a fighting champion? Fans feel that sometimes the WWE just does it because he gets enough of a pop from a crowd that he only probably does need to only show up 4 or 5 times a year. That's what it feels like. I mean, he's not The Undertaker. He did end The Undertaker's streak. And Paul Heyman won't ever shut up about it. That's okay. You know why? The only reason people seem to cheer for Lesnar is because they know they can recite every word that Paul Heyman says when he comes out and introduces himself. And then he introduces his client. But what I'm getting at, folks, is before I end this year is, so Brock Lesnar held the championship for a very long time, even though it should have been Samoa Joe's or Braun Strowman's or anybody but Brock Lesnar. So what does this mean for 2018? Where is the WWE, where are they going with their championships? Who's going to be the new champions begin the year? Who's going to retain? Who's going to be the same? Who's going to change a lot? I think you already saw kind of a babyface turn with Alexa Bliss. Some people still boo her. Some people still cheer her. Honestly, I cheer her because she reminds me of Trish Stratus. I love Nia Jax because she's amazing. I had a lot of time thinking when I have family over. I wasn't able to do the podcast because I didn't have a computer around. But I will say this. I'm proud to be a wrestling fan. I will never shy away from being one, even though people make fun of me for it and make fun of us for being wrestling fans. Don't be ashamed of being a wrestling fan is what I'm going to say. Talk with other wrestling fans. It's very therapeutic. Back to what I was saying. Lesnar is revered as a part-time champion by some of us, and some of us chant Suplex City. Honestly, guys, he only does one suplex, and it's the German. He never, ever does Northern Lights. He doesn't do a vertical. He doesn't do T-bone. But they guaranteed how he has a shirt for every city. Welcome to Suplex City, population, blah, 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 blah. Shit really doesn't bother me. It bothers me that we don't have a champion that will show up and actually make the title relevant. That's what bothers me. We have a champion that never shows his face. He never talks on the mic. Thank God he has Heyman to do that for him. I'm okay with that stuff. But I'm not okay with, okay, let's have him show up at a pay-per-view and wrestle really sloppily against guys that actually show up to the show and give an effort. Samoa Joe is probably the other dark horse that I didn't get a chance to talk to you all about throughout the entire course of the year. You look at what Samoa Joe has done in the past in TNA. You look at what he's doing now. Really amazing work is in the future for Samoa Joe. I hope he becomes the new Intercontinental Champion. Elias Sampson, also a good dark horse to discuss for next year in 2018. He's able to get the crowd to pop when he pulls out the guitar. He's a good worker. Good fucking heel. I mean, the whole entire arena is just booing him the entire time. He's staying out there getting more of a pop. It's like he knows how to work the crowd like puppets. And he's fucking genius. So, I like Elias Sampson's chance of becoming a champion in 2018. Enzo's Cruiserweight title reign may come to an end due to the fact that Rey Mysterio may be coming back. It's not confirmed. I don't know. He's part of Lucha Underground. And there's a possibility that he may not be coming back. Good news for Philly fans, right? Anyways, folks, happy holidays. We're off the rails uncensored. I am B-Train, and I got to go to bed, folks, because I got New Year's to celebrate from the comfort of my own home, and I'm not going to freeze my ass off. My phone went from 72% tonight. Point is, I hope to have some awesome, amazing guests in 2018 on Off the Rails Uncensored. And from those of us at Wrestle Radio, I hope to have a plethora of hosts. Not too much, not too many. But good night. God bless you all. I love you. Thank you, Australia, Canada, Japan, New York, New Jersey, Boston, Mississippi, wherever you fucking listen from. I love you guys. Thank you, Chicago, Denver, Kansas City, parts of St. Louis. I love you all. Thank you so much. I'm going to bed. Good night, bitches. I will catch you in the new year, 2018. Love you all. Thank you so much.